Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, including, see, this is the thing without the engineer, including iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening to us. It's Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Thank you for listening to us. And right here is everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Hello.
And you have the glass of wine in your hand.
I do. I'm extra happy because I have a glass of wine in my hand.
Now, you're in a room with three comedians. You think you can handle it?
I think it'll be a bucket of laughs. Death by laughter. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, okay. She's laughing already. And one of the comedians you've met, you've met them both, but one you've seen do stand-up and one you haven't. But let me tell you something. You know, some of the comedians that we have on the show, they're on their way up like I am. They're not, you know, they're still in the game. We have two successful comedians here tonight. I'm going to turn the camera right here. This guy is one of the top comedians in Spain, and he's been on Comedy Central. He's been in plenty of movies. I even went on his website and saw a picture of him with makeup, so I'm not the only comedian that wears makeup. It's my buddy Manu Benitez.
How are you doing?
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Tell us how to really pronounce it.
The way it's pronounced is the right way. So.
How do you pronounce it?
Badenes.
Badenes.
We have just five vowels, A-A-O, so it's quite easy in Spanish.
You don't have U?
We have U, but not U.
U. U. Okay.
Just say A-A-E-O.
Right.
Well, Manu is a very exotic name.
Well, it comes from Manuel.
Okay.
So your real name is Manuel, but you went by Manu.
My name is Manuel, but it's kind of trendy to say Manu. Some like
exotic.
Know. Yeah,
that'll be our little
from
secret.
The Basque Country.
Actually, speaking of names, I forgot to ask, but I'm gonna turn the camera around to our other successful comic because she's been on over 90 commercials, probably 100 by this point. She's been on. She has. I don't know if you still do. You still do a podcast? You did do a podcast with Daryl Hammond from Saturday Night Live. You're all over the place. You're doing stand up. You're acting. Look at the smile on her face. That's a successful comedian right there. But I don't know. Should I call you Sarah Halstead or Sarah J. Halstead?
Sarah J. Halstead.
Sarah J. Halstead. You want me to bill you as Sarah J. Halstead?
Sarah J. Halstead, but you can call me Sarah.
Well, that's what I've been doing. But Ms. Halstead, let me ask. Why the J? Is there another Sarah Halstead out there?
There are hundreds of Sarah Halsteads.
Was there a famous one?
A porn actress, yes.
Oh, yes.
No,
the J is a porn.
I knew there was something going on.
With a really bad boob job. If her boob job were a little better, I probably would have let it go with not adding the J, but now I feel compelled.
So you got the J and she got the D.
Good, double D.
See, the non-comedian with the punchlines. There
you
go.
That's the line. It makes me zippy.
But that's interesting. So when did you realize that was was out there?
Well, really early on, I just wanted to. I think I was trying to buy the name,
the
domain.
Yeah,
and the domain was already taken, so that's how it started.
All right, and you actually
for my website. Yeah,
you actually probably clicked on that domain and was horrified.
I watched it for a few hours. Yeah, few days.
A few days. Sure.
Still have it on speed dial.
I'm sure.
it's in my history on my phone.
Well, before we get started, and we're already talking already, this is going to be a fun show.
It is.
You're laughing already, but I do have to say we do have our sponsor. We have a couple sponsors. One will be in the middle of the show, but Raise Energy Drink, and I've left my Raise Energy Drink at home, sadly, so I'm drinking water. But Raise Energy Drink is the best energy drink. They have the best flavors. They have Baja Lime, just like Baja Blast from Taco Bell. They have sour gummy worms. They have a pina colada flavor called South. You used to live in Miami, South Beach.
For a long time.
Sounds like a pina colada, and it tastes like a pina colada. The best part: zero carbs, zero calories, zero crash. Just look in the description, and it's the best tasting, and it really wakes you right up. Go to our description in our either podcast catcher or YouTube, and you will get 15% off a case of Raise Energy Drink. That'll keep you up for the next 5 years. So go to check out Raise Energy Drink. So should we start with Manu or should we start with Sarah? Because I've got stuff for both of them.
I guess ladies first.
Ladies first. Sarah, You were born in Flint, Michigan?
I was born in Flint, Michigan.
You drank the water before the lead was in there?
Who knows? I drank the water out of a garden hose for 18 years, so.
Really?
We didn't have indoor plumbing, or what happened? We didn't really think about it. We didn't have filtered water when I was a kid. Like, we didn't have Brita. We didn't think about it.
Yeah, but you had a kitchen sink.
Well, we had well water. My family.
Part of Flint.
We were fancy, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Who knows when the problem really supposedly started? It was when Governor Schneider switched water sources from the Flint River to Lake Huron.
Right.
Oh. Or pardon me, from Lake Huron to the Flint River.
I see. Right.
And that's supposedly when the problem started.
And you must have grown up, like, Flint, Michigan was a boom town at one time, and you must have grown up right as it was going bust and the plant's closing.
Yes, Daddy worked the line at GM, and
that must be devastating.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we've been through a lot, that little town.
Yeah.
First Roger and Me, which was the worst, and I know that Michael Moore meant well.
Right.
When he created that, and it was a brilliant film, and Michael Moore is brilliant, but it did the worst things for Flint. No one wanted to live in Flint after that film was made.
Oh, really?
So our economy went from bad to really just shithole, worst ever. You know, the population started to dissipate, and still today there's only 100,000 residents in Flint, Michigan.
That's crazy.
Only.
So you think if Michael Moore didn't make that movie, then there might have been a resurgence?
I think, you know, it just let it be, you know, and right. For him to, like, shine all the I mean, he made it look really more catastrophic than it was.
Right.
The woman eating, did you see the film?
I've seen it, yes.
Okay. Well, there's a scene where he makes it look like everyday people are skinning their pet bunny rabbits for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just, you can find every weirdo in every town.
Right.
And every town has a little strange nook and cranny, right. And he kind of focused on those areas, but.
Yeah, not the areas where people are drinking out of garden hose.
Right, well, yeah, exactly, because that's, you know, on the slip and slide, being kids, happy, suburban, you know, yeah, I had a great childhood. Trees, tree houses. And yeah, drinking the water out of a garden hose. Everyone should
drink the water out of a garden hose. It wasn't in Flint, but
thanks,
you know,
Nicole.
Yeah, you're not
alone. Was that Denver water?
It was Denver water. Yes, it was.
Oh yeah, that's always been better water.
I hear things about
my news. Looking at us, going, what am I? It was America, a third world country. What's going on here?
Pretty much, yeah. We can't get good water.
Yeah, it's strange. But I've been listening to first off, I listened to your album, which came out right as the pandemic hit.
It did, right?
RVs and Cats.
Yes, RVs and Cats. It dropped on Amazon Prime. The special dropped the first day of the quarantine in Los Angeles County. And I think most of the country was quarantined, except Miami, of course.
Right.
but yeah, most of America, I think, was quarantined that week when it dropped.
Right.
I got really lucky with that. And then the album came out several months later.
And it's very funny, but
oh, thanks.
Yeah, what I was curious is, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about you, including Craig Shoemaker's. He's great, but about the last half of the podcast had nothing to do with you. It was all about his neuroses.
that he likes to put on me, likes to project on
right,
me
right.
As like, my mentor.
I think you got two words in edgewise in the last half hour. But
I hope he's listening.
I've got something.
I know he won't.
I'm sure he won't. I hope he's listening too, because he might laugh. And I'm I would love for him to actually know who I am, because I've seen his stand-up, and I admire him. But
he's one of the best.
Yeah,
he really is.
Absolutely. But what I was going to say, I've listened to a bunch of things, and there's like kind of a gap. How did you get from Michigan? Oh, that's right. Now it's coming back to me. Now you went to New York first.
I'm so impressed.
You
really,
went to New York first.
Mark does a ton of research.
You went to New York first, and then you went to Miami.
And then I went to Miami.
Right. You wanted to become a Broadway actress.
I did. Yeah.
And ironically, you were just in the most recent Chorus Line movie.
I was. Yes.
Did that bring back memories?
It did. You know what's really interesting is I'm a more the most successful category of my life right now. I initially wanted to be a model.
Right.
And I was a very unsuccessful model. So what you do when you're an unsuccessful model is you become an actress.
Right.
And I really, in my 20s, I just wasn't, I'm not sure if it just wasn't the right time at the right place, if I wasn't talented, if I hadn't lived enough. I'm not really sure, but I really just wasn't making a living off my passions at the time, and that's when I discovered wine.
Right.
And then I got into the wine business, and it just felt so good to actually be making a living that I just leaned on that for the longest time. And then I missed acting, and I missed performing. So when I left wine and went back to performing, I became, you know, more successful than ever as an entertainer. And I think it's because all of that life that I had lived.
So you think that the reason that you're successful now in L.A. as opposed to then in New York is just the life you've lived?
I do. Yeah. I think if I had not had the rejection and the marriage and the corporate life and the highs and lows, and it was also a kind of a crazy life because I was in the champagne industry.
Ooh. Oh, so wait a second. Nicole just perked up.
I was like, ooh.
It was very opulent and ostentatious, and Miami is the champagne capital of the world.
Is it really?
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. So I have some stories. I would have a 3 o'clock at the Ritz-Carlton and a 4 o'clock at Cheetah Club. it was quite the dichotomy of the biggest category of champagne sales. One of the biggest categories is our strip clubs.
Right.
That makes sense.
So that was a really big part of what I would have to do.
Right.
Working for Laurent Perrier and Perrier Jouet. The nightclubs and crazy times.
It never occurred to me that there were people that went around from bar to bar and hotel to hotel and other places
very
selling
competitive.
Wine and champagne.
I started out as a champagne ambassador for Perrier Jouet and Champagne Moom, or mm-hmm. we call it Mums here. Mm-hmm. And then that parlayed into a regional manager and lots of back and forth to Champagne and Paris and being the liaison between the Champenois and the U.S. market. And yeah, it was really wild.
Right.
This little girl from Flint sitting in a round table with, you know, dissecting what is happening and, you know, the glass of a champagne house that goes back to the 1600s.
Were there any other brands you had to compete with directly for, like, okay. Like,
yeah, so Dom Perignon.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Moet, Krug.
Yeah.
Pommery.
And these are
Nicholas
huge
Poyette.
Brands you're competing with.
Yeah. Yes.
So how are you, what was your pitch? How is your champagne better than theirs?
I would just, lean on the story. The story of champagne is very poetic. And when it's told the right way, it's very difficult
tell me the story.
I actually wrote a play on the history of champagne.
I know you did. I know you did.
I love the history, and I love that's
so go
the
see
best
the play.
Part.
And the best part, you wrote the play and you wrote yourself a part, which is great.
I did. Yes.
That's the way you do it.
And I wrote my dad a part.
Aww.
Yeah, you got.
So your
you
dad
actually. Take care of you. Well, he played a guitarist on stage. He's a classical guitarist,
oh,
and
wow.
I wrote a role for him to play while I narrated. And we had Dom Perignon as a main character, Madame Clicquot as a character. It was really cute.
Oh. Hey, what was your character?
I was the narrator.
Oh, you were the narrator.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were, it's like our town, but everybody's drunk.
Everyone got plastered.
And you're
because, wait, so the tickets were $300 a piece. I sold out.
Do you
it
get
was a full
champagne
theater.
With that?
You got six glasses of champagne.
Wow.
So yeah, I was very popular at it was at the Charleston Wine and Food Fest.
Now,
I was very popular.
And like
that's
you said,
great.
So it was like Dom Perignon and I guess, I don't know, Moet, all these other people. I'm guessing that Cisco and Boone from Boone's Farm were not there.
They were not. Well, who knows? They were in the tent.
Okay.
Outside.
Yeah. So you had to cut them out of the play.
Plate of champagne.
You had to cut the Boones out of the play and Cisco and.
I really started in the 1600s with Dom Perignon, the famous right. monk who discovered champagne. And the story started in the 1600s and it ended at around 1830.
Right.
So I didn't really go into
it. I
want to
watch this play. I love champagne.
But, you know, that's, I should write a part two.
Yeah.
Is
strip
there,
clubs.
I can collaborate with that one. I know a few things, but
let's do it.
Is there a place to read this play?
I haven't published it. No, you know how plays are. You have to see it live.
I know. Well, hopefully you'll be putting that back on, and who knows who's going to be. Maybe this guy will be the narrator. Manu.
How
are you doing?
Manu. Hey, Manu. Now, Manu is from, let me give you the story, Sarah. This Manu is from Spain. Top comic in Spain. You could see him on YouTube, on Comedy Central. I watched some of your stand-up in Comedy Central.
Did you?
It was in Spanish, so I didn't laugh.
Yeah,
but
you didn't understand shit.
No, my Spanish is weird because I know some of the words, so I caught some of the words. But I will tell you, and now he is here in America, and he's not only doing stand-up, which is interesting in a second language, but you're studying at the Stella Adler Theater.
Yes, I got a scholarship, a Fulbright scholarship, to come here and improve my training. I think they gave it to me because I didn't want to come. It was like,
why didn't you want to come?
I was really busy. I mean, I have a son. He lives in Spain. I had many reasons to say no. You know, but in the end, I've been living from theater from the last 10 years, and times are really struggling with masks and people and
right.
The regulation. Spain is, besides, a very, very, very disciplined country in many ways because we were a dictatorship for 40 years. So when there's a rule to be committed, we are really committed to that rule, you know? So our curfew, our lockdown was serious.
Yeah,
was
when they say lockdown, you lock down.
Was really, when we say lockdown, it's a real bloody lockdown. You know what I mean? Mm. So it was challenging. It was struggling. And I applied for this Fulbright. And I say, well, I want to go here because I wanted to put on stage a play about, it's a classic. It's a Russian classic from the 19th century. One man's play. But I wanted to develop some drama skills in the best academy possible. You know, and Stella Adler was my chance, my choice, sorry. And they say, okay, we're letting you go. And here I am. I'm quite naive. I'm still.
So it was difficult to get out of the country because of the lockdown?
No, I mean that it was difficult to keep on progressing on theater the way I was.
Okay.
Live performance was shutting down.
I was performing in regular theater from Tuesdays to Sundays. You know, it was like in big shows with I don't know, we were the last show that I was, it's called The Whole Show, and it's like 25 artists and dancers and acrobats and 25 technicians, and I was the MC. Clearly I got the it's clear that I got the virus at some point, you know, because it was really hard to work in so many people around.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Now things are much more regulated, but I'm talking about the first wave. So I applied for the scholarship and it happened. But I'm really surprised about her story, Sarah's story, because somehow we've had some parallel development in many ways.
Oh,
because
please.
Many people don't know that I used to be a lawyer.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I was a lawyer for many years, the same way you were working on the wine industry. I was an attorney at law. And at 29, I had, I don't know how could I say it, but I had already defended as many cases as you can imagine from the movie, like plot movies.
You had peaked at 28.
Yeah. I began really young. And I was in touch with the worst of the high and the low society.
Interesting.
In many ways, you know, because many of my clients probably were drinking.
Yeah, they were probably giving you champagne for helping them get off.
My champagne.
Yeah. You know, the ones who were right and the ones who were wrong. It was. So I was sitting on tables talking to people the same way you were in probably similar spaces, like saying, what am I doing here? You know,
right.
Sometimes. But I always wanted to be an actor since I was 9 years old, and I was on stage for the first time in school, primary school, and it was really, really full of people. And I remember I didn't know I was the funny role. I was the funny guy until it happened. I didn't understand in the rehearsals. Once I was on stage and I say my first line and everyone began laughing, I said, whoa, this is really powerful. Yeah. I want to do this. And then stand-up comedy arrived to my country and was it was like the new rock and roll.
Yeah, this is why this is what I'm curious about is when stand-up really hit Spain. Like
it was the beginning of the 2000, 2001, 2002. I cannot tell, like maybe 1999, but anyway, it was a different, we used to make jokes in a different faster way. They're shorter. Humor was different. And then stand-up comedy arrived. And we were not so many doing it in the country. So it was like we read the wave. We took the wave and we enjoyed it. And then, yeah, one thing brought to another one. I was into data protection and things like this, more into business assessment. And I decided that I could make that compatible with going up on stage and just on my shit without rehearsing so much because I didn't have the time. But once I had success on stand-up, with the stand-up comedy style, some producers called me to develop regular roles in classic, well, not classic, it was blockbusters at the time, but long-term big hits in Madrid, right. In Gran Vía, which is like
so
similar to Broadway.
If it was like rock and roll, if it was brand new, was it like hot? Was it sexy?
You know, I always say that glamour on stage usually lasts about half an hour. especially unless you're on a theater, and I've been really lucky because in Spain I perform in front of big audiences. But when we were doing the rock and roll route, traveling all over the country the same way comedians travel here, I remember that you could arrive to a club and perform at 11, 12, 1, 2 at night. I mean, really crazy Spanish rhythm style of living, you know, and people would remind you for the next half an hour. But after that, it's happened to me that I was in the super busiest place in the world dancing, and people and say, hey, and the same person who was trying to get a picture with me would tell me, who are you?
So it was like, they just would know you're someone.
So you have half an hour. I always say comedians, we have half an hour in order to succeed.
Okay.
During the night, you know?
But, I mean, did you ever, was it like Beatlemania? Like,
did all you have the groupies?
Girls, yeah, groupies were checking you out and...
I have always been.
Yeah, I mean, I know you were married at the time when you first started.
Yeah, I was married, and I was bringing up a son. I'm still doing it, trying to do it. Well, the worst way possible because here I am instead of being there.
Right.
But what I'm saying.
Well, you can say hi to him on the air if you'd like.
Yeah. Hi, son. I'm really sorry.
Really sorry.
When you
for
hear
everything.
This, and he's becoming a teenager. We'll speak about this and all my fails in the next future, incoming future. But I'm sorry. I gave priority to my shit instead of yours. I'm really sorry. I'm really, but at least I'm aware of that. You know.
Yeah. I mean, some people are not aware of it. Yeah.
Now, did anyone mistake you for a Gibb brother? He looks exactly like a
this,
Gibb.
Yeah.
I'm really flattered
uncanny.
By that.
It's unbelievable.
From the Bee Gees, yes.
Roberto Benigni. They say.
Well, I see Roberto Benigni just from the physical humor, but nobody's ever said the Bee Gees to you?
You're too young.
But I'm a huge fan, so. Yeah.
So you know who Barry Gibb is?
Of course. No, they were super trendy in Spain in the 70s, of course.
Yeah, and you don't think you look like Barry Gibb?
I'm too flattered, but it's a good comparison. I would prefer to seem like Paul Newman, you know, but...
Sure.
Oh, man, I think Barry is...
No, Barry... the best thing, I just started watching these reaction videos on YouTube. And for some reason, no black people know that the Bee Gees are white. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if that's shtick or what, but I see
soul.
That like,
yeah.
The Bee Gees are white. It's like, oh.
Just like Hall & Oates, people would assume, I think, Hall & Oates would be black too.
Yeah.
It was so soulful.
And right. So I don't
came out white guys? What?
Yeah, but the Bee Gees never sounded white to me, but or sounded black to me, but what am I going to do? Anyway, I got the camera poised on you, and unfortunately.
No, drink.
Please drink. Here's Manu. There's Nicole. Okay. Because unfortunately, I'm going to ask you about your failed marriage.
Oh, my failed marriage.
Which, I mean, this is when you got in the wine industry and you met somebody else in the wine industry.
I love this conversation.
Is this a funny story?
When this happens. This is so. I'm so comfortable right now.
That's what I try to. That's what I try to do. That's what a good host. Like,
your podcast host. This
Let's
is gonna be
talk
a comedic
about my failed marriage.
She has a right to keep silent. I need
no,
to
you
say.
Both, you both.
No, excuse me. I'm her lawyer. She has a right to permanent silence. She doesn't need to answer to this question. Okay.
You come in, you think you're doing a nice, easy podcast, then Mark with the hard-hitting questions.
And calling it a failed marriage.
By the way, if you're her lawyer, she owes you a bottle of wine.
Well, it's the least she could owe me.
I paid my divorce lawyers in champagne. Thank you very much.
No, but
Cuvée, the very best.
But you met somebody else in the wine industry and you married him? Is that what happened?
I did. I tell you, he was amazing. We got along so well. We traveled the world together. We were madly, madly in love. He was handsome. He was smart. He was funny. He was talented. And then one day, we were at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And we were eating. And I could hear his jaw crack as he was chewing his food. And I just couldn't take it anymore.
And that was it.
It's brilliant, because I think it's the best reason to
eat. Wait. Manu, can you relate to this? Can you relate to this in your marriage?
And I said, draw up the papers, Manu. And he did that for me.
Yeah.
There you go.
And that's how it happened. Yes.
I will never get married.
That's what I say. Don't trust yourself. Never trust yourself. You never know who you're getting married against.
Getting married against is a good way to say
it. That's how a lawyer would say it.
Yes, yeah, who you're getting married against. But yeah, it's not like there's a line of women waiting for my hand in marriage. But come on. No, stop. But you went from the reason I bring it up is the triumph that came from it, and we have something in common, as you probably don't know.
Hmm.
We've both ridden in RVs cross-country from Miami, Florida, to California.
From Miami you drove in an RV?
No, I was 11 years old.
Okay.
And my parents drove us. Yes, it was definitely different because it was you and your cats. Yep. It was me and my sister and my parents. And let me tell you something. It's weird when you have sexually active parents and you're trying to get up to get a glass of milk at 2 a.m. It's not fun.
It's so romantic.
It rolls. It rolls.
Hey, mom and dad.
So it was quite a coincidence. But
you should make it into year one a special.
No, right? I've talked about it in my special. It's a whole thing. But
parents and RVs.
Well, not my special.
RVs and coitus parents instead of RVs and cats.
So how did you, I mean, the RV life, I'm familiar with it, but how did you like it?
I love it, and I hope to do it again.
Yeah?
And I rented,
what kind of RV?
It was just one of those cheap 1-800 rent me on the side. It was, I forget the company, but one of the screen windows was torn, and I didn't know, so my little cat got out the first night, and I lost her forever.
That happened to us too. Our dogs got
out. Really? Wow.
We were sitting in a restaurant, and we're looking out the window, and our dogs are right there looking at us.
Oh my gosh! And you got them back?
They were staring at us eating.
Oh my gosh! That's
well,
so funny.
Yeah. Dogs are like they're gonna hang out a little bit more. Cats just bolt.
She got scared. Yeah. And
so you never got her back?
Nope. I never saw her again.
Oh.
The first night.
How many cats did you have?
I had two. Now I have one. And I looked up the definition recently of crazy cat lady, because it just seems like all it takes is one cat. A woman only needs one cat to be put in that category.
I disagree. I'm goth. I've seen girls with 7-8 cats. That's crazy.
That's a little nuts. That's the cat lady, right?
Yeah, but when you walk in that room and it's just cat pee just permeating the air, it's not good.
Yeah, no, you have to be really fastidious with the cat box.
Any wacky campground stories?
I met a cute boy named Sammy. I don't know whatever happened to him. Never got his last name. He was a poet. I would meet people that live off the grid.
Okay.
You know? Yeah.
No, you go to those KOAs, you get to know
so
people.
So, like, they don't have a last name. No? Like, that's why I couldn't stay in touch with him. Who knows what his story was?
He was on the run. He was on the lam.
No email address, nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, no, just, that was it. Just the memory. That's all I have.
I've gotten with people that live off the grid. They usually would give me their email. It's happened to me a couple of times. Like, they're like, I don't have my phone doesn't work all the time or something.
No, bet.
And so then they give me their email. So I wish you could have got an email. He would have sent you poetry.
Yes.
He wrote a book on poetry, but it was never published. It was like, yeah.
Did you read the book?
I did. He was very talented. He got my heart for about 3 days, and then I had to move on.
Oh.
Because...
And when you say boy, when you say boy, was it a younger man or was it a boy?
Something about the way he ate.
It was the way he ate. The jaw cracked.
Jaw cracked.
Yeah, I didn't realize it until the third night. That's better than after 10 years with my ex-husband. So, but what was the question? What was the? This is so fun.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I totally forgot about
campground stories.
Oh, boy. I call him a boy. Yeah. I don't mean to call him a boy. No.
So he was like 20 or 25.
He was a little older. Yeah. Right. I didn't know anything about him.
That just makes it more exciting.
It was very exciting.
Yeah.
He had crow's feet. He was over 18.
Okay. Good.
Good to know.
You think, because you never saw his ID, because you only got one name.
No, I never, liked his vibe. I liked his pheromones.
There you go. No, it was primal.
Yeah, when you don't bother to get their last name, that's fun.
Kind of.
That's fun. That's better than marriage.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Even when you don't remember the first
name,
romantic. Then you crush it.
Exactly.
I try to get the first name at least, Manu. I'm a classy guy.
I remember the first name.
No, it's not the same for a man than for a woman. She is allowed to forget about the first name.
No, you're right. Yeah, trust me. Plenty of women have forgotten my first name.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
No, but at the same time, it's true that I am terrible with names, for instance, for even a short period of time, like something so basic as people with Spanish names around me. So imagine if it's...
Right. Well, I can imagine. It's even... some American names for you, I'm sure, are weird and hard to pronounce.
This happens to me very... Yeah. I've realized that I don't speak English. I went to England to try to learn English, but I've realized here in California I don't speak English. One of the reasons is because I speak very fast, and second is probably because I drink a lot of espresso coffee. It's related, but no one drinks real good coffee here, and that's why people don't speak so fast.
So Starbucks is not your speed.
But when I arrived, when I arrived to Starbucks, and this is true, I say, my name is, what's your name? And I say, Manu. And I say, what? Manu. And then... Some of the person arrives and say, my name is Sikia. And that guy writes the name perfectly well, with an H between the K and the I. Bloody Sikia. Manu. It's just for you know what I mean? That it's impossible. So it's me probably expressing myself.
If we go to Spain, where's the good espresso?
If you're going to Spain?
Yes.
Oh my God. Anywhere.
Anywhere.
Anywhere. And you know what? For €1, €1.50... It's really, I think Spain is perfect for a retirement in your life. When you say,
I love Barcelona.
Yeah.
Are you impressed with how I say it?
Yeah.
Barcelona.
You te feas muy bien.
Galicia,
I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Because my favorite word in Spanish is cereza.
Cereza?
C-E-R-E-Z-A.
Cereza. I want to take a fiesta in the Cereza.
Cereza. And it's in really Barcelona. I really admire people who can say cereza.
Right. I admire you for using Z on the show.
I'm from Valencia, which is don't even try it. I come from Valencia, which is 350 kilometers underneath Barcelona. It's the same weather, but it's a secret unknown. It's full of local forest. Well, I shouldn't be saying this.
We say Wesser.
No, don't say anything. I don't belong to anywhere. Don't forget about the name of my hometown. Honestly, because it's a secret.
Ibiza?
It's the
Did
same
you party in Ibiza?
Ibiza? Oh, yeah, of course.
see, I'm getting down in Ibiza.
Ibiza is half an hour, 20 minutes by plane from Valencia. So when you begin the trip, and the plane is still rising up, you can see Ibiza already.
Wow.
you think you could do it by swimming, but no, definitely. Right. At least not on the return.
Okay.
For sure.
Well, let me ask you one thing, because I'm sure Sarah, you know this person, a friend and former guest, Tamer Catan, and he's doing comedy in Spain now.
What's his name? I didn't know
Tamer Catan. No, he's I would hate to listen to one of our past shows, but listen to our past show with Tamer from last year. He married a woman from Spain. He met her online.
Oh, well my
done.
Goodness.
Well done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're still in love. They're still together. He married her. And there was a whole, I mean, this is during the pandemic, so there's a whole,
whoa,
like.
I wondered what happened.
It's a great story. So he's in Spain now, and he's doing a lot of comedy. And he says now that there's a lot of places where there's comedy in English.
Ah.
Yeah, little by little, but there's no money yet there. I mean, there's not an industry. What is true is that it's more more and more every time. There's a local foreigner community growing
right.
in Spain. Because Spain has something that any other, not too many places in the world can compete with. California is one of them, and it's the weather.
Mm-hmm.
The
yes.
weather and quality of life.
Right.
You know, it's a country where you can drink a glass of wine for 2.5 euro or a glass of champagne for 3.
Oh, I like that.
Or
you're out of a job.
Beer, or a beer, no champagne una caña, too. As we say, because we don't drink, we prefer to drink short glasses, you know, like cañas, which right. is not so as big as a pint.
Sure.
But we drink, but we keep it cold because once you finish one,
right,
another one is coming. So we always keep the booze cold, you know? And it's a country where you have the sunshine, the beach, I'm going to be very critical with our, we don't have an eye for business. We give importance to quality of life. As long as you can pay a beer and have and be with your friends, which is the things that really are important in life. There are things that you say, things that are important. No, we really develop these things.
It sounds like my kind of place.
So when an American person arrives there and has an instinct for business, you realize that you can buy a house for a decent price or a cheap price compared to your country, and you have all the. So it's a good place to go retire yourself. And some streets, you know, probably because you've been to Barcelona, in Alicante, which is the south of Valencia, of the Comunidad Valenciana, there are some residential areas, suburbs, where you find the streets named in English or German.
Wow.
And even the radio stations, while you're driving the highway, you all of a sudden, the radio station changes and you listen to it in English or in German, which means there's a huge community of people developing.
Well, that's unlike LA because every station's in Spanish here.
I understand.
But it's a different Spanish than yours. It's Mexican Spanish.
It's a different Spanish. But yeah, it's true. But it's true. It's true. The thing is that, clearly there's a geographical reason for that
right.
as well here.
And now, have you had any instances where somebody, you misunderstood somebody misunderstood you speaking Spanish
here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, more than in English, even.
Spanish is that different? Like, can you point out any differences?
There are certain countries, we understand each other perfectly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's clear. And even it's a relief when you find. But I need to say that I speak English 99% of the time I'm here.
Okay.
But it's beautiful to see things bilingual everywhere, all billboards, everything.
Yeah, I want to learn Spanish. Well. I think it'd be very useful.
But for instance, there are some countries where there are many differences with Mexican and, for instance, Argentinian or Chilean
mm-hmm.
or
okay.
Uruguayan are a bit closer to us in the way they express themselves.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean we understand each other 100% in everything. But especially it's like groceries or vegetables, things, concrete things that are different, like, usually food.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. The food.
Yeah, what's an example of a food that's different from,
for instance, carnitas.
Right.
Okay, or things like this. Unless you're really into tacos, we don't eat good tacos in Spain. Well, there's a Mexican community, but the way you can enjoy a taco experience here mm-hmm. in LA is not, and I've realized, I don't know if people do, but it's better in food trucks than in restaurants. So the cheaper, the better.
Yeah, we realize.
That's the way it works. If it's $2 a taco, that's the real good one.
Yes.
So in the middle of a street, you know, if you want to be feeling posh and sitting and someone serving you, it's not going to be as good as the food truck. That's my opinion.
I discovered this new place. I don't know its name, but if you go to Venice Beach and you go on Washington and it's across the street from Cabo Cantina, which Cabo Cantina has the posh tacos you're talking about, and then you can go across the street to this little Mexican restaurant, and I can't remember the name because it's in Spanish, and they have delicious burritos and delicious tacos, and it's just a really, really good time. I'm always about trying to find that place where it's authentic.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've been in LA how long?
I arrived middle August. So
okay, so
less
than a year, you've already realized that the food trucks are better than the posh Mexican restaurants.
There are not so many things I've learned, but
you learned that one.
I learned that one. Yeah. That's intuitive.
Yeah. Even when I ate meat, I definitely, my friend Luis and I would always go raiding, like, there are certain places around town, and the closer you are to downtown, the better the tacos get, because the more you're in the communities. And he lives out in Highland, Highland Park, I want to say. And if you go to Highland Park, then you end up getting, like, really good tacos, because it's all a very authentic Mexican community.
So. Yes, I agree. And I found in where I live in WeHo, and
good neighborhood.
It's really
you
beautiful.
You knew where to move.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it was. Yeah, for logistics reasons, but also because I love two areas. One in which I can find myself more into the European rhythm. One of them is WeHo. The other one is Silver Lake.
European rhythm. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good, Barry Gibb.
Yeah, and Silver Lake is one of
I see another Bee Gees song. European rhythm.
European rhythm.
See, he can do. Listen.
Of course. I was a singer. In the same way you were.
All of these fascinating facets to
no,
Manu.
But it's true that you say that you wanted. You were a comedian once you fail in. What do you say?
I didn't say fail. Mark,
I didn't even
fail.
Say real estate. No.
You talked about something you were before, and then
she worked in the wine industry.
I was a model. I was model. A very unsuccessful exactly. model and actress in my 20s.
Exactly. Yes. So
he was a very unsuccessful
singer.
There's
like a part of the industries. Models is one of them, and rock and rollers and comedians is the other one. So if you are a frustrated musician, you become a comedian.
Right.
If you're a frustrated comedian, many musicians are frustrated comedians, and also models. And so now, but
porn actors.
Yeah, it's true. So I don't know why I was speaking about this. I'm lost.
No, no. You were singing the Bee Gees. Yeah.
Because you want
to be a singer. That's what you want.
No, I wanted to be an actor. And when I was 18, my dad wanted me to be a lawyer, but he didn't tell me. That was his frustration. And I remember...
He just thought you would, figure out to be a lawyer?
To the university. No, yeah, no, he...
He kept dropping you hints, like, leaving little law degrees and stuff around the house?
No, he was very subtle. You know, there were not the same chances in Valencia or Madrid. And I remember we were in the summer in a lovely area called Benicassim, where I spent my holiday. They spend their holidays. And I go visit them. And I say, Dad, I want to be an actor. And he say, all right, son, bring me the melon, please. The melon, the
right.
water, yeah,
right.
like ignoring my choice, and I say okay, I'm gonna play with a band, and I became a singer in a pop band. We were recording some shit, and that you never know. I did that, and then I quit the band because I say okay, I'm gonna pass, I'm gonna get the degree, and I'm gonna become
right,
a lawyer.
Right.
Many years later, there was a casting for. A huge show, and it was for the MC, and I wasn't as famous as to apply for that, but it was in Italian, and I speak Italian as well, because I learned Italian because I was in love with forget it.
Yes, you said it without saying it.
The real things, the only things I've done in life, the only things I've done in life that are worth it, I did them for love.
Right.
There you go.
And I studied Italian, so I quite bilingual in Italian, something they're similar, but it's difficult to speak properly. And that casting was in Italian, and they were looking for a singer in Italian. And I didn't get the role because, in the end, the co-producers in Italy wanted an Italian comedian there. But they remember me, and 2 years later, they called me for the biggest musical. And I'm saying, if I didn't have played in that band when I was 18, I never got that role when I was 45.
That's right. Amazing.
So it doesn't matter what you're doing in life. It doesn't matter if it's not related to your job, to your concrete, how could I say, big-headed point of view. Whatever you do is going to be useful if you know how to make it happen later.
So like Sarah said, life lessons prepared you for when you finally got the big shot. You might not have been ready before.
That's the right way to say it, because, but she did it in a beautiful way. But that's what I'm saying, that we are, when I was listening to her speaking, I was saying, like, whoa, there are many serendipities, even though they become from different fields. You know what I mean?
I'm about to put out a book of poetry, and I was telling Mark that I'm nervous about it because it's not my normal content, but you just made me think this book of poetry could lead to something else, something new, like a new opportunity that I wouldn't normally get if I only stuck in my comfort zone. So thank you.
No, and not just that. I need to say it's time for renaissance. How do you say
Renaissance
time. We are living Renaissance times. Mm-hmm. You can't do only one thing.
Okay.
You need to try to play the drums and feed the cat at the same time, because you don't know what's going to make money.
Right.
So it's time for be creative and not surrender, but trying to, I say, play different drums at the same time. That's the way we say
it. I like that.
In Spanish, you know?
Yes.
Because one of them is going to sound different.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm here, that I decided to come to LA, to America, and leave everything behind just for this chance that I should have lived when I was 20 instead of I had many reasons as I said before to say no, means that you need to be always
inventing
and let yourself be fed by
challenging yourself
curiosity, man. Exactly,
and innovating.
Anything we've learned with, especially with this pandemic, it's that life is so long.
For some people. Not for Meatloaf, but for some other people, yes.
but didn't Meatloaf lived a life.
Yeah,
he did.
He did, I'm kidding.
And so there is a lot of time to do whatever you want.
That's true. I'll tell you what I want to do right now is I want to get it to Nicole, because I had a great segue when you were talking about tacos, but tell them about our other sponsor, please.
So we are sponsored by Renegade CBD and Renegade Kush.
Yeah, in the mic.
I'm sorry. I was connecting to the audience. You're right. Yes. We've been doing Zoom too long.
Yes,
too
you've
long.
Been doing Zoom way too long, yes.
So Charlie actually talked to me today, and we should be finally getting our Renegade CBD. And Renegade CBD is delicious, or it can be soothing if you have the balm or the bath bombs. But whatever you do, it is a really good product. It's one of the best CBD products I've tried in a long time, and I'm very thankful that I get these samples.
Yes, but if you want to, tell them how your skin feels after the bath bomb.
Luxurious. It's like butter.
Yes. Ooh. And tell us how you feel after one of the Kush gummy worms.
Oh, gummies. They have these delicious gummies, and they're made by professional confectioners, and they are so good, and they make you just relax. Like, it's a lot like this glass of wine here.
Yes. And so go to renegadekush.com and renegadecbd.com and get yours now.
Yes.
Okay. So, Sarah, sponsors. What's that?
You have some good sponsors.
Right? Yeah, we're looking samples? For more. Yes, wow. We're looking for more. So, because Audible changed their whole thing. I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to get into that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you get Audible again, it's a whole thing.
I'm getting to know because I revamped my podcast, and I'm getting to know the culture again. Well, it's very different today than it was
absolutely.
A few years ago.
Absolutely. Now, tell us about, and you know, I've tried to get all the, you know, all the Blue Chew and all that stuff, but speaking of that, you have a whole bit on your album about meeting Ron Jeremy, and you were talking to Craig Shoemaker about that.
Meeting Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, and if Craig is what, go ahead.
Well, it's funny because that bit did not age well. We know that Ron Jeremy got in a lot of trouble, and he's in prison. But, I mean, are we really surprised when all of that resurfaced?
Well, I saw Ron Jeremy for years.
Okay.
Because I worked at the Rainbow. He would every night, sometimes up to three women, take a woman into the bathroom and do a game of show me yours, I'll show you mine.
Yeah.
So it's like he didn't need to rape anyone. There were tons of willing women who would just open their blouses to him.
Yeah, he was Ron Jeremy.
Here, listen, now I don't want to prosecute the case. That's Manu's job. But
exactly.
He did grab my girlfriend's breast with without permission. So.
And see, he didn't need to do that.
Yeah, he's done things like that.
And why it was so confusing for me. I'm like, you were getting laid consensually all the time.
Right. Which is amazingly enough.
He could do whatever he wanted because he was Ron Jeremy, and it gave him,
sense of entitlement, yeah.
Yeah, the thing I was going to ask is I know you have a bit about it, but did he really, like, try to be inappropriate with you? Was he inappropriate with you?
Oh, no, not at all. He said that he enjoyed my work, and I said I enjoyed his. It was a really nice exchange. No, he wasn't inappropriate at all. He was absolutely fine.
He tried to sign my tit once.
He just got the biggest kick out of meeting him.
Yeah, he's actually been on the show once, and that's a whole story. But the thing is, you were talking to Craig, and you both were like, I don't understand why Ron Jeremy became a porn star and who this appeals to. I'll tell you exactly who it appeals to, and you can bring this to Craig.
Sure.
Guys. Because we watched that and we're like, if that guy can get laid, I can get laid.
Well, I think...
Because any man is better looking than Ron Jeremy, no matter how ugly they are.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I ended up doing another bit on that. And then when the Ron Jeremy, you know, when that all came about, like the drama...
Right.
I dropped it. It's just such a sensitive environment now.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to be careful with your material. And I just dropped the bit. But yeah, I did something about that, about him being really unattractive and approachable to men. Because porn is for men. At the time, it was for men.
Yeah, now there's one of them.
Now it's like, okay.
Yeah, which is great. Yes. We can watch porn together now. And by the way, I hate to be so binary because there's 28 genders, so we don't want to say men and women, but everybody can watch it.
I watch porn.
A little something for everyone on Pornhub.com.
You just rolled your eyes, but you have a whole gender-neutral bit.
I do.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely would be non-binary if I were... Back if I were younger,
right.
I think I would.
Right.
Yeah.
It's too late now.
I'm old. I'm tired. I don't want to go through all that.
I would still be a she/her, but I would have probably endorsed being bi earlier. Like I didn't really come into it until I was in my 20s, but like I was always bi, and I think I would have accepted it at a younger age if I was born in a different generation.
I feel bad for bisexuals because it's not like because everybody's pansexual now. So bisexual is like prudes.
I don't care. I like anyway. Girls and I like guys and I
you do?
And I'm happy.
But yeah.
I wish I could just fall in love with a
I can't
woman
fall in love with a
day.
Girl. But I would love to. I think women are beautiful mm-hmm. and I definitely have a certain type. And when I watch porn, sometimes it's girl on girl, sometimes it's really big dick with girl.
Oh, wow.
But I always watch it with a girl. I would never watch like guy on guy. It wouldn't do enough for me. I like the feminine energy. Even with the guys I date, they're in touch with their feminine.
Right. Are you in touch with your, you are in touch with your feminine side, Manu, I would imagine.
What do you mean by that?
What
is this program ending? How long does it program take?
It's an hour. It's an hour.
Is it a fucking hour?
It's a fucking hour.
I don't say terrible.
It's a fucking no.
We don't swear. Right?
Swearing is encouraged.
We encourage profanity. No, but you're a mama's boy. You talk about it in your act. You're a Spanish man. You're a mama's boy.
No, yeah. Well, I wanted to say something about porn. Porn has developed. In a different way, but it's true that there's a lot of porn that it's all only related to how the boy feels, you mm-hmm. know, how the man feels. So porn has changed in many ways
yeah.
now, and it's able to be visualized. But me, I'm a son of the patriarchy, and because I'm in my
right.
40s, and the only thing that I know is that I'm aware of it, and I try to make less mistakes today than yesterday. And hopefully less tomorrow than today.
Right.
That's the thing. But I'm still sensitive enough in order to understand that porn wasn't approached to women. And there were many women that would have loved to watch porn at some point.
Yeah.
But I come from a very traditional country, culturally speaking, not as traditional as Italy. Because, for instance, Italy, you know, the church has been there for many, many, many
yeah.
sure,
centuries.
Sure.
But Spain has changed radically in the last 20, 30 years. We were a dictatorship for 40 years.
Right.
We were very traditional, but... however, we have the most avant-garde laws for gender equality. And it's interesting to see how this works in the country in many ways, you know?
Right.
So, for instance, I'm very... Things that surprise, culturally speaking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that here, the pronoun is the first thing that someone gives you with a car and a name. He, his... She, her, mm-hmm. they, them.
That's okay? That's a very recent phenomenon,
it's
by
first,
the way.
It's the first thing that someone
gives you. And I don't
do
it because I'm old.
We don't do that. We don't do that. We don't do that. I'm getting into the game of mm-hmm. of trying to define myself.
And by the way, you're in West Hollywood, so there's another reason for that.
Yeah, no, yeah, I know. But even in anywhere, even in emails, corporative emails, I can right. feel it when I'm writing mm-hmm. someone or even the academy or anyone defines that. But for instance, in my country, we're developing a law. You could change your gender quite easily, much more easily than what you could think.
Mm-hmm.
So you could even without any surgery or any psychological advice, you at some point could decide to change your gender.
Okay,
which is a different, fascinating fascinating debate about the equivalence or not about gender and sex, which is a matter we're not going to speak here now.
Right.
But it's a that's a different cake. Okay. But we can do that. However, we haven't got into this his, her, and I think it's because Spanish we have a problem with language because the adjectives, for instance, are sexualized, which means that rojo, right. Roja. You know what I mean?
Spanish too.
Amigo, same. Amiga, or
friend.
But English is neutral.
Yeah.
Right. So you already have the
makes a needing of define yourself with a pronoun because with the text in the context it's not so easy to detect.
Yeah.
But for instance, we have our arguments as well, because what is it? A doctor or a doctora? A juez or jueza? Some of them are accepted, are into the speech of people in the street. And some others, we're still, like, they sound a bit, like, strident yet. And it's interesting to see how society is going to decide what's worth it and what's not.
Well, it's interesting what's going to happen to the language when non-binary people in Spain start really, they got to come up with new words.
We have a ministry who decided, she's a feminist, but she has many, there are two different ways of understanding feminism. And it's about confluencing sex and gender, okay? And
right.
Which is biological concept or defining concepts, all of this. And she was creative, and she said, for instance, amigos, amigas, amigues. And she created an E as a mid, which doesn't exist in Spanish, and amigo, amiga with an A, and amigues with an E. And that created a lot of comedy in my country because we were like creating a new word, you know? So it's interesting to see that, but I don't know why we were speaking about this. What was the reason?
No, well, we were talking about porn, and
yeah,
I was going to ask you about Spanish porn, but
I tried
that's
to
where
have
we ended after porn.
Yeah, so you tried to class this up, and thank you so much. But let me ask you, how did you meet Daryl Hammond, and how did you end up doing a podcast with him? Daryl Hammond, the great Saturday Night Live performer, one of the best impressionists, one of the best people I ever had.
Yeah, he's one of the best humans on the planet.
I've heard that too.
He's
a couple
really,
people met
really
him.
Wonderful. I met him at the Comedy Store. I was hosting the OG.
Okay.
Or the OR, the
you
original
are.
Room, which we also call the OG.
Yes.
I was hosting, and he was a drop-in. And I've been, you know, an admirer of his, you know, since the first day that he walked on the stage. I'm hugely, hugely obsessed with SNL.
Right.
So I was a little starstruck. But we struck up a friendship. And at the time, I had the podcast at the Comedy Store in the basement.
Which is haunted.
Yes, it is haunted, as is the Green Room. And the
That's haunted
room.
In a whole different way.
Oh, I have stories.
Oh, please, yes.
And
one.
I
pick one.
Okay, well, one of my haunted stories, I was about to go on in the belly room. So, you know, that little green room.
I've performed belly room many times. Yeah.
And there was a young comic named Ben and that I had befriended. And he was really nervous. It was his first time in the belly room at the Comedy Store. And I was kind of talking him off the ledge. And I said, everything is going to be fine. He said, you promise? I said, yeah, everything's going to be fine. And I came back from my set and he wasn't there. And no one saw him. He wasn't in the lineup. No one knew anyone named Ben in the lineup.
Wow.
And we don't know where he is now.
No, I never saw
Ben,
him.
Ben, if you're listening to us. Ben.
True story.
Listen, maybe you're out there traveling alone. There's a radio station and you hear me sing this song. Well, if you do, we're thinking about you. Come back.
Nobody gets too much heaven no more. It's
Ben.
Yeah. We got a mashup here. I don't know what's going on.
Ben.
Yes, Ben, please come back, Ben. Ben and Billy, please. And I think they're at the same campground.
It's a very sad story.
That's
That's a weird story.
But just, maybe
you're talking
knew.
To a ghost.
He knew.
I think so. No maybe. One knew. I mean, oh, they're wild, wild stories about the comedy stories.
No, we had Joey Gaynor. We had Joey Gaynor on. He told us some of the old school stories
about the body they found on the roof and shit like that.
Yeah, it's a weird place. It's, I mean, it's
man,
a,
and you can feel it when you walk in.
Right,
it's just got that. You know, like a little tightening in the chest, but it's exciting at the same time.
Oh yeah,
it's riveting.
Yeah, it's.
Oh, I love it there.
Really? Yeah, because I've always said I love the Comedy Store. I mean, all the clubs have a different thing, but I always say the Laugh Factory and the Ice House.
Hmm.
If you bomb at either one of those and you're doing comedy at least a year, quits.
Mm.
Because those places are easy and set up for people to laugh.
Yeah.
Comedy Store, anything could happen. There could be shots, could be anything. Improv, sometimes the crowd's a little stiff.
Right.
But for me, my experience is Laugh Factory and Ice House, it's a layup. It's a gimme.
What's happening with Ice House? Are they
I've heard some things. I've heard that they're going to remodel it, so it'll be not as good as it was before.
Probably not whenever they remodel. But, it's never as good.
I was going to ask, and we're wrapping up here, but you've been on so many commercials. And by the way, how much fun has this show been?
Oh, it's been awesome.
But
I'm having a good time.
It had a musical number.
I mean, they sang and everything. We're going to have to have one more at the end.
Harmonize.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to have to do
I was thinking the lyrics were from Bruce Springsteen, actually, when I was talking to Ben.
Well, I thought you were doing Michael Jackson's Ben. I didn't know what – you ever heard Michael Jackson's Ben? They Sing to the Rat? Ben, my friend.
No.
It doesn't quite go like that. Yeah, you've never heard that song, but it was his first solo song. But I was going to say, the one commercial that you did that just fascinates me is the Crepey Skin commercial.
Oh, God.
Have you seen the Crepey Skin infomercial? When that comes on, I am riveted. You don't have Crepey Skin.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh.
Did you see it?
I have, because it's funny, because when you mentioned that, I was like, I did
I've
see
been in
you
all
on that.
Stuff, a lot of skin stuff.
Oh, well, you did. You were also the Astroglide girl.
I was Astroglide.
Now, where does that?
Crepe
Erase. Back up. Astroglide, where does that air?
That was just like for their marketing purposes. So I think I'm like on the box.
Really?
Yes. I was part of the campaign.
You familiar with Astroglide, Manu?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
If you're not, it's a lubricant mainly for the anus.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's supposed to be the best lube for, like, ass sex.
What?
Am I wrong?
No, it's true.
It's true.
Oh, my God.
You didn't know this?
No
one ever told you this?
Jesus.
Well, no, it is too, though. Like, it's just
trendy.
Like KY is good. Like, KY is the best for the vagina.
I just thought it was for the under eyes.
Oh, no.
Oh, you knew. Stop it.
I didn't know that it was for the anus.
It's definitely not for the under eyes.
No, because KY is like the best for the vagina, supposedly.
And then
Astroglide is specifically for the ass.
Oh.
Hence the name.
I'm learning so much.
Hence the name Astroglide.
Today. Yep.
Oh, interesting.
That's, your face is on the box.
Yeah, it's on the
of
box.
Ass lube.
And well, what's what the, you know, the more embarrassing the content, the higher the pay.
Okay.
So at the time,
it was a big
and they tricked me. They didn't tell me what, you know, they didn't tell me what the product was until I had already committed, but I didn't yet sign the contract. And then when I signed the contract, I was like, oh, wait a second. I'm going to need a bump in pay here. Yeah.
But the Crepey Skin, it hypnotizes me. It's one of these infomercials. It's like Jane Seymour or something. I think Jane Seymour.
Oh, boy.
And she, like, you know, apparently old women get. I never heard of Crepey Skin until this commercial came on. And then, like, when they.
I was one of her girls.
When they rub it on and they, oh, your skin's not crepey anymore. Like, oh.
It's ridiculous. And, I mean, I've been in. I remember I was in a Mercedes-Benz commercial and I played the mother of a man who was 2 years younger than me, and I played his mother. So it's getting better. It's getting, because when I did Crepe Erase,
how'd you find that out?
I don't even think, I was not old enough to be in a Crepe Erase commercial.
You had to be the youngest woman in the whole thing.
I think I was, but there were a lot of women my age, and they, you know, it's getting better, but, you know, just 5 years ago, ageism was a thing for women. And it's still a thing.
But you know, like Shawshank Redemption or Goodfellas or Godfather, if you get it in the middle of it, you got to watch the whole thing.
Yes.
That's me with the crepe race.
Okay. Well,
if it comes on my TV, I am fascinated. I remember I did some bit and it was like on the TV in the background. I did some show and it was at a bar and it was on the TV in the background.
I'm sure.
I couldn't stop watching it.
I was the queen of infomercials for a while.
But it
paid the bills.
Hey.
Exactly.
You are a working actor. Yes. That's better than 95% of the actors.
I agree.
Thank you. Yeah. It's always good to be on set, you know, and work begets work. I've made amazing relationships in that line of work, and some of the actors have gone far.
Yeah.
I mean, some are like series regulars now, and it's like, I'm like, remember we were in the Coloplast commercial together, but right. Then they're trying to act like they don't know me.
I think Nicole backed me up, Manu as well. I just, you know, and this has always been the case meeting you. You've always... just somebody that's just so approachable and such a nice person.
And you too.
It's hard. It's hard for people not to like you.
Well, thank you. And you're really funny.
Well, you're very funny too.
I enjoy your comedy.
I enjoy it too. You know who else is funny? This guy right here, Manu.
I want to see your material.
Here's the thing. This is why I'm surprised that you were taking an acting class, because your act, it's evident from your act in Spanish and English that you have taken theater, that you have taken acting classes.
Well, I'm learning to communicate myself, to express myself in English.
Right. No, I got that.
Because my rhythm of comedy in Spanish is different, completely different. But I think an actor... Look, there are some jobs that require to go on to get a degree. Like, for instance, a doctor, you need to, in order to go to the operation room, you need to know how to open a body. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. if it's a life better than death... things like this, or to be a lawyer. But there are other...
Well, you're comparing your comedy to opening somebody's chest and operating.
Right. But there are other jobs that are related to experience, like a shoemaker. The first time you make a shoe, it's like, it's the worst shoe in your life. But after 2 million of shoes, you're a real good shoemaker, which is exactly the same with performing or with acting.
Right.
You know, and stand-up comedy is a different discipline from acting in many ways. Of course, you can develop a character on stage and choose a character of your personality that can fit with that character as well. But when you're expressing yourself as an actor and you need to follow a script and feel things, the problem is that you need to learn to be someone else, a life that you have not lived, probably in a lose-lose situation, and really feel it and do it the right way with drama skills, the same way as you can do it in comedy. And that's what I'm trying to... I've performed as an actor in my country, but this play that I'm trying to develop, there's a thin line between comedy and tragedy, and you need to be as reliable in one thing as in the other. Very good in comedy, but I want to be as good as that.
But what I'm saying is the physical moves that you do on stage, they're learned moves. You're not just flailing your arms. You're flailing your arms with a purpose when you're telling a joke and you're setting it up.
Because I've developed, of course, because I've been working as an actor for 10 years.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
All time long. But, of course, anything you do on stage needs to have a purpose.
Are you
any move, anything you do, but it needs to be spontaneous at the same time. It cannot be. And if you're doing a stand-up comedy because you're working from the truth, that's a challenge. You need to be able to express yourself and do it new, sell it new every day, as if it had just happened to you 10 minutes ago.
Well, that's what's kind of cool now is that you're doing it in English, so it's completely new to you.
And
it's amazing.
And of course, I need to be humble and learn every day. And you know, I'm trying to get into open mics and feel, but I'm not. I'm just trying to learn a different way to do things that I don't know how intuitively can be developed in Spanish in the future. But of course, I mean, in my country, I'm performing in front of 1,000 people. Here, I need to go to an open mic and get my 2 minutes. I need to start from zero. And that's one thing that gets connected with acting as well. Past doesn't count.
Right.
Every time you're on stage, you need to live the present. That's the only way to make yourself be trusted. So if you're thinking about how good it went or how bad it went or how it was last week, you're not selling your your stuff convinced 100%. You need to sell it from starting from zero every day. That's the same thing with acting. The only things that drama requires other depth, truth, focusing all the time, and specificity. So there are different skills, and mm-hmm. I want to be as reliable in one thing as in the other.
Right. And before that's beautiful. Sarah and I both know the truth of that. I mean, you have to be in the moment while you're on stage. Oh, if yes. you're not, you're done. I had a show last week. I was not in the moment, and the material's okay, but material's got me through. But it was like, I just took myself out of the moment and didn't bring the crowd with me. It wasn't good. Then the other shows I did were fine. So.
You know what helps me to stay in the moment? I try to remember that it's a two-way conversation yes. with the audience, and then that gets me back in the moment. Intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's beautiful.
And not performing.
Right.
But you don't have a fourth wall when you're performing stand-up. People are there, and you're talking to them. Mm-hmm. Laughs are the way they communicate with you, but it's a conversation.
Right.
Yes.
But when you're performing a play, there's a wall.
Yeah, the right. fourth wall.
You don't have the feelings.
So beautifully said. That's exactly right.
And
yeah.
laughs are a connection that mm-hmm. sometimes it's tricky because you know that sometimes you've performed in some places where laughs were not exactly on a Sunday afternoon like they were on Friday night, and you begin to have doubts with yourself and begin to, is it the right thing I'm doing? Am I okay today? The reaction, the feedback is not the same. But you have a feedback. But when you're doing a drama, mm-hmm. you're performing a drama, and there are other actors, and you're there, and you don't listen to them. You can feel them, but they're there, but you cannot look at them because there's a wall there, imaginary wall. You need to be absolutely focused and working step by step, specificity, absolutely specific about what you're doing, without regardless of their reaction, because you don't have the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different discipline.
Right.
But you know what? I learned something when I was a lawyer, and that's something that it's not a lesson, but a lesson that I applied to myself. Fails need to last in your self-esteem as the same time as success.
Right.
5 minutes.
You told me
5 minutes. I told you that.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
When you are on stage and you smash it, it's 5 minutes. Think about the next thing. Don't live in that bubble, in that cloud. When you're failing and it was a bad day, but you know who you are and you're exiting with yourself, and you perfectly know professional comedians have something all in common. You know when you were not good enough. You really know when you did not do the right job.
Mm-hmm.
So that fail, forgive yourself. It's just 5 minutes. Go ahead. Look from it. Don't let that influence your next performance, because then you're not living the present. You're living the past.
Right. Very well said. Very well said. Two more questions, Manu, because next time.
Well,
and by the way, you guys, I could talk to you two forever, but
this is fun.
The one question on your website, there's a picture of you in makeup. What movie was that, or TV show?
Makeup? You mean like a like a decadent diva or something like that?
Yes, yes, yes.
I think that was the whole show. That was a play I was performing for 4 years all over the country, in Madrid, Barcelona, and then running, which is the story about a decadent diva who is the owner of Studio 54 in New York in 1979 on the New Year's Eve to 1980. It's a musical. It's the stuff I was telling you that it's
right.
We are 25 performers, and it's like the Le Cirque du Soleil, but the MC has a huge way in the play because comedy runs the play.
Okay.
So you need to make of appearance and sing songs, classics from the late 70s, and like Dionne Warwick or Bee Gees and we need to sing these songs and be. And we needed to sell that thing. It was really a party, and it was beautiful because we were celebrating this New Year's Eve in 1979 to 1980,
right.
And people in front of, I don't know, 600 people, 700 people, 800 people, regardless of we were playing in Christmas or in the summer, they were, as soon as they got into the theater, they really believed they were at Studio 54 in New York in 1979.
That's awesome.
It was mental.
Right.
It was absolutely mental. But it was like a joy of life, a song And we have a saying in that place. It's become a huge show in Spain. You need to be in the hole in order to get out from the hole.
Okay.
Right.
And that's a beautiful saying that we all artists, we are connected during these difficult times. We are trying to follow that slogan, that saying all this time. You know, you need to be in the hole. We've been in the hole. We're getting out little by little. Just enjoy yourself. As she said, you have only one life. It can be long or short. I don't know. But just live as if it was the last day.
Right. So be in the moment. This has been so shallow and so deep at the same time.
Sorry, Sarah.
There's nothing sorry about it. I love it. One last thing, and then I'll try to cajole you to sing it's a Bee Gees song. The Improv is a stand-up comedy club. It is not an improv club.
It is a stand-up comedy club.
Right. Because it's funny because Manu is like, where should I perform? And people say The Improv, and you're like, I don't do improv. I do stand-up.
Right, no.
And so that's another language thing. But it is one of the top.
Improvisation is a discipline in Spain.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is here.
As well.
And it's called improv. But The Improv
actually
sort of pre – well, I guess Second City was around. But improv actually it's one of the oldest stand-up comedy clubs ever, and it started in New York.
I know.
So
I
now you know.
It was like, but when you asked me, do you do improv or something like? Do you go to? And I say, no, I don't do improv. But I was thinking about improvisation. I wasn't thinking about the club.
Right.
It's confusing.
No, I've been in the club and I've performed a couple of times there. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Really fun.
That sounds great. So, you guys gonna do one more VG song or How Deep Is Your Love? Something?
Yeah, I need to know the lyrics, but she knows it.
How deep is your love? Your
how
love?
Deep
how
deep is your
deep?
Love? How deep is your love?
I have a cool. It's not my story, but Jive Talkin' was derived. That came about.
God.
Did you see the documentary, the Bee Gees documentary?
I did not.
It's amazing. I recommend everyone watch it. And I lived in Miami for a long time, and the sound that the car. Or the this particular bridge overpass makes when you drive over it. That's where Jive Talkin' came from. It was from this little.
We've both ridden on the bridge. Yeah.
On the bridge in Miami.
I have an analog. Anecdote about that. I had a girlfriend who came to live to San Antonio in her pre-university course, and she came back with a tape in the 90s and a song, and it was like. John talking. I remember there was no Spotify. You need to go search in the record shops. What the hell was that?
Right.
And you sometimes remember. I don't know if you remember that, but I used to sing to the sellers different songs to try to guess if they knew what it was.
I used to work at a record store. People would do that to me. I get it.
Yeah. I was the one who I was the asshole who was there and sang the songs to you. Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a song and he was like, it's like Jive Talkin' or something. So definitely they sold me the Bee Gees record. And I was like, I found it. It wasn't that song. In the end, just by listening to the voice, I could understand it was Jack Talking by Deb Stewart, the other part of Eurythmics,
right?
Oh, who had a record, a solo album with Jack, not Jive, talking.
Jack talking.
And I could find it just by singing to all record stores in Spain until I really had an inspiration moment. And I thought, maybe this voice, because it's British, it sounds like English. And I found it.
Yeah.
And when you found that, when you found that, you fell in heaven. We've lost that with Shazam and all those.
No, I know. I used to be the guy.
You found a treasure, something tangible that could make real. You know, I don't know how to express this.
No, you're right. I miss record stores too. And bookstores and record stores, man.
Bookstores.
You used to just spend a day at the bookstore.
Yeah,
I know you did. I did.
Yeah, the Strand.
It was the best.
City, I would just stay. That's how I would keep warm, basically. Winters. Yeah, or Barnes & Noble. And I still have a couple left, but not many.
Yeah, it sucks. Anyway, as I said, I could talk forever, but.
I have one more question, though.
Oh, please.
Did Manu finish those two beers?
Not at all.
I don't think he finished one.
That's the only question I have.
No, because we had a bet going if Manu could finish two beers. He only finished one.
Yeah,
all right.
Only one.
So I lost the bet. I said a beer and a half. You said two.
I said two.
Anyway, but okay. I was jealous of your glass of wine.
Oh, he wanted.
You
the
want
wine.
A glass of wine, please?
It's okay, no, it's okay.
And now that the show's beer. Ending,
but I'm Spanish. We drink, but we eat at the same time. That's what we yeah.
Right. Well, I'll send Nicole out for tacos. Anyway, Sarah, tell us everything you got going on. All your social media, your website, everything that you got.
I have a monthly show at the Hollywood Improv, the Lab, called Bottle Shock,
right.
with a lineup of really incredible comics. And that is the second Wednesday of every month, Bottle Shock.
Okay.
I have a new podcast. Actually, I revamped my podcast, Drinking During Business Hours, and that's everywhere you listen to right. your podcast.
And you've had guests like John Cryer on.
Yes,
you had big
yes,
names.
I have, yeah. It's a lot of fun. And
hopefully you come back. We'll talk.
And
there's
I would
so
love
much
to
more.
Have you.
There's so much more. Oh, I would love to be on.
And I'm at Sarah J. Halstead on all socials, and my special RVs and Cats is on Amazon Prime and also the album version. On Spotify,
on every
everywhere.
Yes, yeah, so it's yeah. on Amazon Music. All of the all of, wherever you stream, get list of Sarah's album or pay for it on Amazon Prime. Trust me, you won't be disappointed.
Thank you.
I can't tell you how many comedians when I mention your name, male comedians light up and say how hot you are. But
oh, really? That makes me feel so good.
Yes, yes.
I'm hanging on. It's the crepe race.
Yeah, it is a crepe race. That's what it is. And Manu, how do people check you out? I know you got manubadenas.com.
Well, if you're not listening to me from Spain, probably Prime Amazon special that comes from Comedy Central is not going to be available in America. But I usually go to the Hollywood Improv to have a look. I buy bread in Trader Joe's, and I hope to be and I hope to be back to Spain by summer. So if there's a way to meet ourselves, probably it would be at the Hollywood Improv.
But follow you on follow you on Instagram, Twitter.
Manu Badenes, Twitter, Instagram. Yeah, I'm there.
Yes,
Instagram.
MANUBADENES.
Manu Badenes.
Right, and check out. He's got some
clips. Contaminating myself from the.
If you speak Spanish, there are clips on YouTube, and I'm sure you could probably hack your way into seeing his specials on Amazon Prime. I know I'm going to try to. Anyway, Nicole, how do people get a hold of you?
I'm Nicole Six Books on Instagram.
In the mic.
I'm Nicole Six Books on Instagram. I'm sorry, I'm really used to, we've been doing cameras for forever.
Oh, yeah.
Nicole Six Books on Instagram, Nicole Six Books on TikTok now, and Nicole H6 on Facebook.
Six with a number.
I'll follow you back. Six, my mom was a groupie for Motley Crue, so she named me after Nikki Six.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I love that.
It's true story.
That is
it's a whole
awesome.
Story. And I'm Goth Comedian, also all social media. What a fun show. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.